when I lost my dad sort of 8 years ago as well, that kind of triggered me again. And that's where, you know, my state of mind was very poor for years. And, you know, my fitness levels, you know, kind of put an extra 2.5 stone, 3 stone on in weight and just didn't feel great.
Now then, Simon, you're on the couch. It's good to have you on that couch rather than joining me on this couch.
It's very different being on the other side of things. So, yeah, thank you.
No worries. It's been something I've wanted to do because, you know, we do the podcast together and we talk to people to get into this issue of what is confidence. But I think it's really important, particularly in, there's a few questions that I want to ask, let me say that, around the outer world and how outer world clothing, etc., can build confidence or contribute to that. So I think you're the best person to ask. So that's why you're in the hot seat, so to speak. So first question, as we ask all guests, is what does confidence mean to you?
Oh, yeah, that's it's funny being the other side of the couch. For me, confidence, there's a number of things here. What I've learned over my years now, it's not just about clothes. And certainly this podcast was never just about clothes. It was about asking guys, not just clothes, what does it mean to them? For me, with confidence, I think now it's a lot of it's how I feel physically and mentally. I think if you start with clothes first, that hasn't really, I think you end up masking a few things, where it's like you're almost trying to put a mask on. So if you're not feeling internally great, if you're not feeling physically and mentally great, you're not going to feel confident no matter how you're dressed, because there's been points over the years where, you know, I haven't been in a great state of mind. Certainly, you know, my fitness levels haven't been great. And then I look and think, God, that was an amazing outfit, but it actually didn't mask how I felt underneath. So for me, you know, there's certainly a level of consistency that I have now, certainly over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, working on my state of mind mentally, more downtime, sort of resting my mind a lot of exercise, better diet. Certainly, you know, I've talked a lot on a few podcasts about not drinking alcohol for 3 years. It's been over a year now since I've been drinking alcohol, and that's in a good balanced way as well. So it's like, really, for me, confidence, it's getting that balance mentally and physically, not just from, you know, putting on a great outfit.
That resonates so much, and I think you're right. I mean, I can look back in sort of pictures of me where, you know, I think, gosh, look quite smart, or even I was stick thin then, and yet if I cast my mind back, the person inside didn't feel that or didn't believe that, didn't have that level of confidence. So I think that's absolutely resonates so much. And I do want to come back to the clothing side, because I think there is a part to play in it. Absolutely. It's why, obviously, we partnered on this podcast. But if you take us back to, I guess, how life has shaped you, because you talk about the mental side, mental health side, physical health side, and how the two need to be balanced. And I know from our conversations, from your being on my podcast, The Restless Midlife, or that kind of thing, that the mental health side's been, you've had the challenges there with that. So do you want to just tell us a bit about your story that's led you to where you are now?
Yeah, it's, I think if I think back, and I have spoke openly about this before, and I look back at the triggers over the years, and I think probably, you know, where it all started with me is when my mum and dad separated when I was 10. You know, I found that quite tough. Remained, you know, I live with my mum. I'm still close to my dad, but like I know that if I look back now over the years, that was really like the start of, I suppose, a few hang-ups and a few challenges. And then kind of it was, you know, a good few years, I'm probably talking about 15 years ago. So, you know, bear in mind, just put this in context, I'm 50 now. Obviously, 40 years ago when my mum and dad split up, and then about 15 years ago when I was sort of 35 that I decided to go to counselling. And that was really the start of my journey to try and kind of, you know, look at how I could improve my state of mind. I still, you know, for many years afterwards, still struggles a lot. And then when I lost my dad sort of 8 years ago as well, that kind of triggered me again. And that's where, you know, my state of mind was very poor for years. And, you know, my fitness levels, you know, kind of put an extra 2.5 stone, 3 stone on in weight, and just didn't feel great. It's funny you talk about looking back at some photographs as well. I go back sort of, you know, about sort of 7 months before I quit alcohol, and there's a photo of us, and I was in Edinburgh at the time, and you know, like, I really like my outfit was like, you know, if I look at that now, but you know, I was really bloated, you know, look quite dead in the eyes as well. And that was a big tipping point as well, that, you know, it took us probably another 6 months to kind of realize that I needed to make some big life changing decisions for not just the people around me, for me to benefit the people around me as well. So I think, you know, like that journey were sort of mental health is, unless you can recognize that, and unless you take responsibility and take a hold of it yourself, nobody can do it for you. It is, and there's, you know, I think my eyes opened much more sort of just before I quit alcohol, to start listening to the likes of podcasts. Mm. You know, and taking, you know, a little bit of self-help from that, and then people around me listening more than I ever did as well. But like really recognizing kind of my state of mind, and it's difficult to do that when you're in it. So it's been an ongoing long journey, but a highly beneficial one, I would say, in the last 5 years. There's been real tough points, but my coping mechanism now are like a way better.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just, I'm gonna go back a little bit if I can. You mentioned obviously about when you were a kid. What age were you when your mum died?
10.
10. Okay, if you think back to young Simon then,
yeah,
and you, that affected you. How did he cope with that at that time? What did you do?
It is, actually, you know what? Like, nobody's ever asked us that question before. If I think, like, at that time, sort of before my mum and dad separated, you know, like, I had, like, all I remember is, like, is great memories. So, like, a lot of friends playing out, you know, which sort of the kids do this age, that age anymore, but, like, you know, out playing football on my bike, I'd have friends round. You know, my parents were great at, like, you know, letting other friends come in and play. I was fortunate enough to have a spare room where, you know, there was all secondhand stuff, or my dad would build stuff for us to play with, like dartboard and little pool table and stuff like that. That was all secondhand, and then he'd build like all kinds of stuff. So like I had a really good childhood. I was around my family as well, lots, my cousins, my aunties and uncles, my grands and granddads, and then I think just that hit, you know, and then kind of having to move out of the family home and stuff like that at that age. I think that, you know, I think probably only like when I went to counselling that she asked these questions, but it's something that I don't really go back to. But that was definitely, like, thinking about it now, such a tipping point, probably which has taken a long time to learn how to manage that and index that in my mind.
Yeah, I know part of the journey is how you move on, but I think some significant events like that, separations become more and more commonplace, yeah. and perhaps we don't necessarily appreciate the significance to a kid who's feeling safe in their life to suddenly it changes. And, you know, kids adapt, are resilient, but we adapt in certain ways and cope in certain ways that stick with us. And I think that safety thing, is that a part of, this is what the question, I guess, is what feeling of safety and that change, does that lead to some, is there some overlap in confidence there? I don't know.
Yeah, quite possibly. You know, when I think back now to when I was a kid, and certainly when I was a teenager, actually thinking right the way through my life, I would suggest, you know, I've been really confident in a lot of things. Probably spells, maybe sort of late 20s, early 30s. When kind of that you know, the natural progression of identity, I think at that time, I feel as though like I went through different stages, like no doubt most kids and then adults and stuff like that, depending on what music you were listening to, your friends you were around, you know, your hobbies, that kind of thing. But definitely I would suggest I had a level of resilience back then and but certainly had confidence, but there were still those underlying issues that I needed to address and to talk about. And when I think about it now, I think it's, and I say this a lot, I think it's so important that, I mean, the Americans are really big on therapy, aren't they? You know, it's just a standard thing. I honestly think it should be like part of the curriculum at school. That there should be, whether it is now or not, I don't know. But it kind of to talk about things in a positive way, though, not just like really, I don't know, because you can have very lean negative questions and stuff like that. I think, like I say, it took us till sort of mid 30s to really talk about that. That openly, but what I did from there, and I was so glad that I did it, that I just had a way better relationship with my dad as well. I just think I could understand a lot more things, you know, probably from his side as well, but learning on how to cope with things.
Right. As a result of the counselling, or that was just...
Yeah, the counselling.
Right.
100%. Yeah. I'd recommend that to anybody.
Yeah. I think that's an important point to underscore. I know what you mean. There's this kind of a perception of, and sometimes a reality of therapy, where you just talk around the drama and you stay there. But that's not really constructive. It's the genuine, what do I do with this?
It is. And I, you know what? I can't even remember some of the coping mechanisms. That's it. But some of the ways to manage your emotions more than anything else. Yeah. And I had a great counselor. She was fantastic. She, you know, again, just let me talk, you know, a couple of questions just dropped in. But then a few ways to kind of like manage my emotions and stuff like that, which definitely like helped us start the journey of managing my state of mind.
Yeah, that's interesting when you say that about school and the managing the emotions. One of the things that are, you know, I'm really interested in it, and I don't predominantly work with men in coaching and what have you, but obviously there's a fair proportion of them are. Yeah. One of the things that I've kind of learned through research and experience is that there is a difference between men and women in terms, and I'm talking very general here, between like women can have, they have a language for emotion, they can articulate it, and that's very protective and useful. Whereas blokes, we're not really taught any of that. It's frowned upon. Yeah. And I think that things like therapy, counseling, just conversations like this can help you start to develop a little bit more of a language for it.
I think... Yeah, I mean, if I go back, you know, talking about your emotions and how you feel to another guy, your friend, like it just didn't happen, did it?
No.
You know, you're talking about, you know, your interests, your hobbies, you know, very kind of masculine, like where, again, definitely, you know, women will talk about their emotions more to the friends, the family. Where guys just, I'm not saying don't, I see a difference, like a huge difference now. you know, there's so much more awareness out there and guys opening up, which is phenomenal, which is something that I saw recently. I went to my first Andy Mann's club session, and that was just a humbling experience, but phenomenal to see guys sat around like that and speaking openly and confidently in a safe space.
So just for the benefit of listeners who haven't come across Andy's Man's Club, do you want to give a quick overview of what it is and maybe talk about your experience there, you know, from your perspective?
I thought about this a lot. You know, I did push post out on my social channels a couple of weeks ago, and it's been in my diary for about 6 months to go. Like every Monday night across the country, I don't know how many clubs there are now. There's hundreds of them. It's fantastic. It's a free organisation to go into. I didn't quite know what to expect. I've been following them for such a long time now, but I felt as though I was at a point where I could speak to my family and friends about certain things, but then there was other things that I just didn't feel as though I could talk about, and I got to the point where I was like, I need to do something different here, and it's not one-to-one counselling. So it was the right time. I'm glad I went. But so walked in the room, and this was over at the Beacon of Light in Sunderland, and there was 30 guys there. 30 guys, you know, it was funny because like I went in and a few of the facilitators were like, we know you. We kind of like, so then it's a leap of faith as well, because if you are recognised, it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to be very open here. And I went into it thinking, whatever they're going to ask me, I'm going to be, you know, I feel confident to go in and talk about anything here. But again, very relaxed environment, different guys from all walks of life, people who struggling with alcohol, drug addiction, which isn't discussed in the groups at all, you know, that level of detail, but just broken off into three groups of 10 and sat around and asked a few questions, and I just really opened up, felt as though I could, but came out of it, and you know, the amount of time I've spent over the years working on my state of mind, and it, once again, realizing that talking about something to whoever it is, what a difference that made to me. I came out, you know, I felt like I was a bit of a fraud going in, and I said that. You know, I think sometimes, and you hear this a lot, and I did post on LinkedIn, which is kind of more of a business social networking platform. And, you know, there's guys, and you hear this a lot, where you look at people and think, oh, well, you look all right. You look as if you're, you know, you've got a great life, follow you on social media, and you're training, and you're out, and you're at work, and you're wearing these clothes, and you're doing this. And then I'm sat there and I don't know, that's where I felt fraudulent, because I think I kind of look as if I'm okay, but underneath, like, struggling with certain things. And I just felt as though, again, just opening up like that and walking out, I just felt so much better for it. But what an amazing organization. The amount of comments and messages that I've had direct from either guys who've been before, who've just started to go, or have been thinking about it for a long time, was phenomenal. And also women as well. Yeah. It wasn't just men, because obviously what you've got to think about is, you know, if, you know, their partners are struggling as well, you know, it is devastating when, you know, one of you is struggling. So, but phenomenal. Definitely check them out.
Yeah, brilliant. And There was something you mentioned in one of the posts afterwards that I read, and it kind of resonated with, or struck me. You mentioned about feeling lonely, even though other people are around, and that. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because there's something in that for all of us to think about.
It's, you know, again, it kind of, the amount of people who say to us, like, it looks like you're having a great life and you've got people around you. Don't get me wrong. I've got an amazing team at work. My family are phenomenal. I just don't see them enough, and I know that that's something that I really need to work on. I've got some amazing friends around me now. You know, even, you know, met you in the gym a couple of years back. You know, that environment is, so like, I've got all these great people, and I've got such a good circle, probably more than ever now. But when you're lonely, and I think the way I talked about it was lonely in my thoughts, because, you know, you don't, it's still difficult because you don't really want to tell people you're feeling a little bit low or like some levels of detail of challenges that you've got, whether it's work, whether it's financially, whether it's relationships, whether it's whatever. And there is that loneliness, which is crazy, really, because, you know, I've got friends around me who I can talk to about anything. But maybe there's still that level that you do hang back on. I don't think you truly tell anybody close to you exactly the detail of how you're feeling. And that's what I mean. Physically, I'm not lonely. And I'm really comfortable in my own space. You know, I live on my own. You know, I've got a small place which is very homely, and I love that, and I feel safe in there, and I'm lucky, you know, I feel warm. And but then sometimes, you know, lonely in your thoughts, not lonely physically, just not, you know, I could spend my full day, you know, with people around me. So that's the loneliness that I talk about.
Yeah, and I think it's that feeling, because you can be in a room full of people and still feel lonely. I think that's important to recognize that's a thing. It is a thing.
And it's not confidence either. So it's not like, do you know, like this is where you've got to be a little bit careful with loneliness, because like if you're confident, you're not lonely, physically lonely. You know, you can talk to people, which is good. And I think it is, I love being out. And I love meeting different people from all walks of life. I really do love people. Like I'm genuinely fascinated by what people do, and there's some good people out there. But then there is that, you know, even in a room of people, you could still feel very lonely.
So it's interesting. And that phenomenon you're talking about, that, you know, it's actually, just as an aside in terms of, you know, the more extreme consequences of feeling low, etc., you know, suicide, self-harm, there is a recognized aspect to it where people have a good life and yet can still feel that fraudulent self, that thing. So it's really important. It's really just valuable, actually. So thank you for sharing it, because it might well resonate with people that it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
No, it absolutely doesn't mean that. And I think you're right, because I think you can really like beat yourself up to think that and I think I did that for you. And this is like, it's not a sympathy vote or anything like that. I'm speaking openly, and I blame nobody but myself. You can beat yourself up. You can think you're a bad person. You're not good at your job. You're not a good partner. There's always things that you can work on. But yeah, I think a lot of people and a lot of guys just take it personally. You know, they think it is them, and actually it's not. It's a state of mind that can be worked on by being around bloody good people, to be honest.
And I guess we have our ups and downs naturally, emotionally. You know, there are times when we're going to feel that from time to time. Is that fair?
It is. I mean, this is another thing that I've really worked on over the years. Because, like, you know, I used to think like things were just the end of the world. The slightest thing sometimes, I thought that's like the worst outcome is going to happen. Way less so now. You know, I kind of think, okay, you know, what's the worst that can happen here? Can I control it for a start? Is it really that bad? You know, how can I change the outcome before the outcome's happened? There's a lot of people who kind of think the worst before it's even happened. And guess what? 9 times out of 10, possibly 99 times out of 100, it doesn't happen, because you can influence.
Yeah.
But that's a change in mindset as well, and that's taken years to kind of work on for me. So less so now, but I did used to think, you know, this is the worst going to happen here.
Does that play into confidence then? Because it's, you know, experience, learning, your confidence in your ability to.
Yeah, and I think that comes from life experience. So you've got to go through things before you learn. Everybody, you know, there's no handbook for anything out there. I think maybe there's a bit of age and experience in there. But there again, there's people who kind of don't learn, who kind of go through, do the same things, think the same things over and over again. Where you have got to learn from these things. I think it's only, you've got to go through certain experiences to go, hang on a minute. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I influenced the outcome of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a hold of that. I've taken responsibility for that. And do you know what? You know, if the worst happens, the worst happens. Do you think you could, have you done everything humanly possible to influence a positive outcome in that scenario, whatever it is? And that's a question that you need to ask yourself.
That's a good point, because you can have the experience and not ask yourself those questions and kind of learn a different message from it. As in, I can't, look, see, it never worked again, yet again, you know, that kind of thing. So there's a bit like a toolkit of questions or something that you build. Was that from counselling? Was that you picked up through life? Where did you pick those kinds of approaches?
I think through life. I think because, and I talk about this a lot at work, you know, just because something didn't work a year ago, 5 years ago, and possibly in relationships as well, you know, how can you change that slightly to have a better outcome? Mm. How can you learn from that to go, okay, that didn't work, but why didn't it work? Mm. You know, if I just changed, you know, the way I managed that in a slightly different way, or, you know, the terminology I used, or I don't know. I think this definitely translates to work, to relationships, to everything. Yeah. You know, just because it didn't work that time, you know, doesn't mean that it's, oh, I'm not going to do that again. Yeah. That didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, we tried that. You know, we tried that in a relationship. We tried that at work. Well, hang on a minute. You know, why didn't it work? Just tweak it slightly.
Yeah. And this is where, if I can kind of pivot a little bit, but on the same topic, pivot into the alcohol, because I do want to pick up on the big life decision of setting up the business shortly. But the alcohol with you, alcohol is the decision to stop and then restart, kind of has that feel about it, because you return to it with a different mindset. But anyway, before we get there, when we're talking about the alcohol, the decision to stop, what was leading up to that, and what were some of the key reasons that led to you thinking, enough?
It's just a car crash. Absolute car crash. There's no, like, you know, people are going to have different views on who were around me at the time. You know, some things I'm certainly not proud of at all. But when I look, and again, I make no excuses for anything. I look at the reasons why. When your mindset's not great, you're going to make some awful decisions. You're not going to make your best decisions in life when your mindset or your mental state of health isn't flipping great. There's no doubt about it. And alcohol just makes it so much worse. Mm. It really, you make even worse decisions through alcohol. So for me, it took a number of years. Like I say, the trigger with a few things was definitely losing my dad. It just, when I look, you know, it progressively kind of got worse. I talked about this a lot. You know, I didn't used to drink during the week, so I would train heavily, eat really well during the week, get to a Friday, binge on alcohol, binge on shit food, Friday, Saturday, and then feel like shit on a Sunday, Monday. And I bet there's a lot of people out there who do the same. You know, and it got to a point where just for me, I wouldn't have been here. And I'm not just saying that dramatically. I just wouldn't have been. If it had gone on for another couple of weeks, another month or something like that, there's just no way I would have been here. I was like just shot to bits, and probably everybody around me was too.
Yeah. So what, because there's a, I don't know if it's a sliding doors moment, but it could have gone one way or the other. What was it that that led to you taking the right choice, I guess? Well, it was the right choice, obviously, for you.
You know, for me, it was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, and again, you know, it wasn't... my attitude towards it was like, listen, unless I make a change for me, then I'm not going to be a better person for the people around me. But what happened was, is ultimately I had to be selfish and probably insular with it as well. Mm. You know, so then I started to walk a lot. Not become a loner, because obviously you lose that social side of it when you're not drinking. But actually, it just felt amazing. It felt phenomenal. Like, I'll never forget that first week. Because again, like, I was never a big one. I never wanted to do the likes of Dry January. Never, because I just thought, that's not really, it might be beneficial to some people. For me, it wasn't. It wasn't an option. I was like, it's all or nothing here, which was kind of like a little bit like my personality. It was a trigger moment that, right, that's it. There's no other option here other than to stop completely. And to be honest, once I got to like 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, I actually never thought I'd drink again. But it was phenomenal because, you know, lost a load of weight, state of mind vastly improved, and just felt fresher for it, you know, very clear-minded. And I think you start to realize that, you know, you need to make some decisions. What are you happy in life with? What are you not? You know, I probably, even more than I've done over the years, you know, kind of go very insular. So like, I just felt as though, right, I'm being extremely selfish, which probably didn't help some of the people around me.
Such a big change, though, isn't it, to do that? So this is a question, because I guess for some who are listening who maybe recognise they're there or they're not quite in that situation, but they realise that they're drinking, there's too much of it, it's too frequent, that kind of thing. So maybe they're not at a really rock bottom moment, but the thought potentially, and I put myself in this because I enjoy a drink, but I also know that I can overindulge, particularly when things get tough or I feel low, you know, you go through that. So I have to watch it because it is a coping strategy, not a good one. But the thought that I can sort of see the fear of, like, where do I even start? How do I start? What's it going to be like? And what if I don't have that crutch? So how did you sort of navigate that? Or was that even a factor when you got to that point?
Water before I quit?
Well, I guess you're at the point where you think, I don't want to do it anymore. Were there any thoughts around, you know, what do I do that first day, that second day, that third day, that first week? What was going through your mind then?
No, I remember being in a hotel in London. And then the following day, once I got back, I went out and I cycled in Hampstead Forest. I found a podcast on quitting alcohol, and that was it.
Yeah.
It was that simple. I don't know what, maybe I was just really ready. You know, I was like, I wasn't prepared any longer to keep hurting my body and mind the way that I was. And I didn't see like another way to do that. It was like a really simple process, but I felt as though like I'd come to a tipping point that there was just, it's like, right, what do you want to do here? Do you want to, you know, you're mentally fucked here. So you're either going to take your own life or something's going to happen to you, you know, from your health side. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. Like there's too much to do, see whatever that's going to look like, whoever it's with in the years to come. And I thought, there's no other option here. You know, like.
Yeah. So what would you, just on that, you know, if somebody's in a position where they are, they're in that place where they look, I need to do something about it, what would be any thoughts or advice for them?
For me, see, I don't know, I was ready and like, I kind of thought, right, find a way to do this on your own. For some people, that's not possible. Mm. It's really not. There's plenty of places out there that, I mean, as I go back to Andy's Man Club, you know, even start going to places like that, because there's going to be people out there who, you know, when I went to Andy's Man Club, you know, I won't go into detail, but what I did realise is that there's just so many similar comparisons sat around that room, you know, on state of mind. I'll call it alcohol abuse, because I definitely know the difference between, you know, drinking alcohol in the right way now compared to drinking alcohol before I quit. But going to take the first step, going to that Andy's Man Club, you know, or look to see if there's any organisations close to you. Even if you don't want to go physically into these places, at least make a phone call, drop an email, you know, send a message on social media, get into a group on Facebook or whatever, you know, confide in your friends, you know, good friends or who you think will give you your good advice. But definitely make the step. Yeah. You know, the longer it goes on, the worse that just gets. Yeah. I mean, I was at the point, I remember, I don't know if I'd been in the post office, and I was sat in the car and my anxiety levels were just off the map. I'm shaking like you wouldn't believe. And I did go and get some medication after that. I thought there's no other way around it, but I'm not, I don't think men are great fans of medication, but I'm glad I did that, because that probably, and that was about 6 months before I'd quit alcohol, that probably at least, you know, got me to a level again. Mm. But go and speak to someone. Find these clubs that are out there and get involved. Even if you don't say anything, you don't have to say anything, you can just sit and listen. Do that.
Do you know something that, not just relating to alcohol or anything really, I suppose mine in weight loss coaching side of things, is I have this thing that I say to anybody, any client, and I think it does apply, is that even, you know, you've got your clubs, etc., but we've got this amazing internet, you know, there's a lot of people knock social media, all that, and I can see the downsides, but there is an ability now to search and find somebody that is very similar to you in a very similar position that is further ahead in the journey or that has achieved it. And I think one of the challenges that we find is we can often say, well, but I'm different, I can't. And look, you know, and you get trapped in your own world. But there will be somebody who is pretty damn similar to you who has done it. So find that inspiration.
I think there is. Again, you know, I didn't know where to start with podcasts. Mm. I actually don't know how, I don't know how I got started on finding, you know, people to listen to. I mean, I talk about this a lot and share a lot of Stephen Bartlett stuff, and his is not all on business, but what I found was there's such a multitude of different types of people on there who would talk about business, they would talk about physical fitness, mental health, all kinds of things. I would just be like a little bit careful, because it's really finding, because it is searching like the internet's a wonderful thing, but it's really finding, it's getting that, because you know what, it's also finding the right person or the right organization that's right for you, because we all are different. There's similarities here, but I kind of think the way we digest things and listen, which has been a challenge of mine. I don't think I've been a great listener over the years, as somebody close to me right now will tell you, but I've definitely, you know, I've taken that on board, you know, being around somebody different, you know, and being willing to listen, you know, and it's hard sometimes when somebody talks about your personality, but I'm like all over that, you know, like if it's constructive, I'm like, okay, great, right, I can definitely tweak that a little bit. I know what my personality is like, and I think that's half of the battle, but it's no excuse sometimes. But try and find what's right for you. And going back to your earlier question about something not working out, you know, so say if you decided to go to one-on-one counselling, marriage counselling, group sessions, if that doesn't work out and you're not happy with the person on the other side of the table, try something else. Keep going. Yeah. Don't stop. It took me years, you know, keep going until you find the right person.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely. And I think that then, obviously you benefited such a lot from being off the alcohol, but you made the decision to return to alcohol.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk us through that? Because that's an interesting one. It's not something that would be right for everybody, but...
No. And you know, I had a bit of a backlash from this, which was a little bit surprising, because I had a backlash when I quit alcohol, and then I got a backlash when I started drinking alcohol again. And it was, I had my first drink after over 3 years, October 2022. And you know what, I just got to the point where I was just sick of it being all or nothing. Mm. Like, in general, work, my personal life, alcohol, no alcohol, exercise, it just like, it's either that or it's that. And I just came to the point, and again, you know, because somebody came in my life at that point and talked a lot about it, you know, which, like, I can't thank this person enough. And I thought, you know what? Like, I feel ready. I feel as though my state of mind, but what I was really conscious of, I thought, what I don't want to do is ever go back to where I was with alcohol. Mm. This has to be a healthy relationship. And the person who was around me, who's still around me now, it kind of like talked about, not using alcohol, because that sounds terrible, but like enjoying alcohol in a good way. And don't get me wrong, like, I've overdone it a couple of times where I've been hungover. But you know what? Like, I've never been low from it afterwards. Mm. I don't drink now. Honestly, like, I've got about 4 or 5 bottles of red wine off like a year ago, last Christmas, that I've still not opened. I don't really drink at home. Like, now and again, I might have a glass of red wine. I don't drink really at all before I go out, because I like being out and socializing and having a pint, you know, or a glass of wine. I don't come home after I've been out and have more alcohol. Might have one now and again, but I'm really conscious of that. I'm kind of like I'm out and I love it. And if I don't, and if I think it's, if I'm not enjoying the environment, where I think in the past, like, regardless, I'm throwing flipping alcohol down my neck and I'm just not bothered, where now, like, I've never been out of control and I like that, you know. I've really enjoyed drinking, probably for the first time since I was kind of like late teens, early 20s, but in a really good way, social way. Yeah. But again, you know, there's, especially with like the Christmas period, which is, I suppose, it's tough. Not tough for us, but like, I'm so much into my fitness that the thought now of not being able to train, and I can't say there's been a day after I've had a drink that I've not done some form of exercise, even if that's like a long walk.
Yeah.
So, but it can be, it's not for everybody, and I know that, because I've spoken to some guys who just absolutely would not be able to go back to alcohol at all, and I get that. And I think it was a bit of a test for me as well, but state of mind is just like, you've got a great state of mind, and you know your triggers, and you know kind of what it's like, and you don't want to go back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of it, as you say, it's the journey you're on with you in your mind, your coping strategies, you knowing yourself, that rebuilding your mental health.
Yeah,
after it.
Yeah, isn't that hard? You can't do it yourself. You just can't. It's like, you know, that's where I feel as though like I've done a lot of self help in terms of listening to podcasts, taking bits out of that, speaking to different people, and hence the reason a couple of weeks ago we went to Andy's Man Club. I felt as though, right, okay, I've got to a point now. I just feel as though I need a little bit more of some form of direction, which really helped. But it's an ongoing thing. And it's just, I think when you realise that, it's not just, you're not going to have 10 sessions with a counsellor and you're going to be all right. You've got to constantly work on this. I suppose it's like an athlete physically. So if you're looking at physically, like, it's just an ongoing thing. You know, you've got to be improving all the time. You've got to be working on it. And it's the same with your mental health. You can't just go, oh, I'm fixed now, I'm fine. Mm. You know, because that's not the case. I think it's just, it's good to constantly work on your mind.
it's a friend of mine, and hopefully we'll get him on the podcast, Simon Ward. He's a triathlon coach and high performance coach, and he often talks about the physical pension, but I also think this is a mental health pension, because what he equates, you know, you got a financial pension, you pay into it. The difference between a physical and financial pension is the financial pension, you get the money, you pay in, and you get the money at a particular date. Physical pension, if you're training and doing it the right way, you're paying into it for a later payout, but you're getting benefits paid out all the way along pretty soon. And I think it's the same with mental health. If we can, if you invest in your mental health, you don't just get the payoff when you're 70 or 65, you get the payoff incrementally, increasingly better and better pretty soon, don't you? I mean, sometimes you have to go into some tough places, you know, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
But I think the payoff at that lifelong journey is massive.
I think so, because like we've probably all been, you know, those sleepless nights, those waking up like, you know, sweating in bed and all kinds, you know, just the difference of getting a good night's sleep. You know, we've all got different things, whether it's work, personal life, whatever, but being able to manage your thoughts in a better way, it just, you know, it just does your wonders physically. You know, I know, like, if I've like been really anxious, my body just like feels like in bits. You know, you just feel run down, skin gets worse. You know, just like, and snappy, I suppose, with other people around you as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So let's get into the big change in terms of the business, because you moved from successful corporate career and took that leap. And part of it is to ask our guests that. And I'm interested in your journey. What led to you making that big jump?
Well, that was losing my dad. That was, I'd been looking, because I'd worked my way up in sales for kind of 15 years. And then my last job was working for a really big corporate organization, sales director there, with a lot of responsibility. And then my dad died November 2015, which was out of the blue. It was. And I just felt as though like I wanted to make some changes. And I'd been looking to set up a business for a couple of years. And my dad was like, really, he was really into his clothes, loved his clothes. It was for his funeral. So I was looking for a tie clip, different pocket square, lapel pin, that kind of thing. Couldn't find anything. And that's where it really started. I thought, okay, let's see if I can source some product, build a website, launched it, found other products. This all sounds very simple, but like I feel as though I'm fairly resourceful. You know, after a career, I was a process engineer, and then in sales, I've just solved problems throughout my career. So finding suppliers and building a website and everything, and it just kind of took off from there with no experience. But I always remember like my old boss, when I worked for a digital marketing agency, he's like, you found your vocation in life, or clothes. I love clothes. If I look from when I was like little, and obviously you have different styles, but I've always loved clothes. Like I just like beyond passionate. I think anybody who knows me, once I start talking about clothes, like I'm off on one. You know, I just think, and I love all kinds of styles. I love looking at like women's clothes, you know, and just different styles. And it just, this industry's like, and again, with the confidence thing, I mean, like I said before, you know, what's confidence to me? It's feeling mentally and physically good. But when your outfit as well is like part of that, in my opinion. Mm. I mean, that can just enhance and elevate like your confidence that you wouldn't believe.
So what is it about clothes? Can you, you're passionate about it. What is it about it, about them, do you think?
I just think the experimental side of it. God, nobody's ever asked us that question. That's a very good question, Dave. it's like a bit of theatre for me. Mm. It's, I don't know, I just see how, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. I see how clothes can make people feel in a real good, positive way. And I've seen it since day one in Master Debonair, where guys come in with, you know, head down and like, oh, like I need to lose a bit of weight and like, you know, and not feeling confident at all. And then they'll walk out And it's just like, you know, for those old enough to remember Mr. Ben, it's kind of like it's walking in with this outfit and then coming out with something else that just makes you feel unbelievable. The theatre of it, how it can make people feel, like, I don't know. Clothes, and it's been a little bit different, not for the sake of being a little bit different. It's... What I'm passionate about is making guys feel more confident. That is, and clothes do play a part in that. And that's what I'm really passionate about. And, you know, certainly, you know, our style is not for everybody, but it just makes you feel amazing. I love the theatre. It's real theatre. I never thought of myself as a creative person. I also thought I was extremely practical. But what I've learned over the last couple of years is actually, like, there is a part of me that's like hugely creative, and I never thought that. And this industry and these products have given me that.
It's shining through when you're talking about it. I mean, you just say straight. I mean, the strap line is outfitting self-confidence.
Yeah.
And so, you talked about it before about, you know, there's times when clothing can mask, but there's times when clothing can enhance, boost. So talk to me about a bit more about that side of it.
I think masking, when I talk about that, because, you know, there's been times where I've not felt mentally great, and, you know, put an outfit on, and I talked about that photo, which I've posted a few times, like, I'm a lot heavier and stuff like that. People go, oh, you look great. I'm like, fucking not, like, you know, mentally not at all. But the outfit, and that was masking, you know, that was kind of like, but what it probably did, to be fair, when I think about it, it probably just gave us that extra 10% boost, you know, to get myself out. So to give me a little bit more confidence than I kind of had. And then the enhancement is, it's hard, because, like, some guys are really confident at pulling outfits together. You know, they are. It comes naturally. A lot aren't. And I think over the years with the what we've pushed out on the likes of social media in terms of different ideas, you know, how to style, how to dress, how to blend, you know, like a floral pair of boots in with a plainer outfit, or be really flamboyant with it. And that's really helped guys. And you see it a lot now, you know, in this industry. Women, certainly women's fashion, they've done that for years. And I always thought, you know, why is there nothing around for men like this? And like over the years now, there's certainly more and more independent retailers out there who are doing that kind of thing. And I didn't have that, you know, I didn't, like, you know, but I had the confidence to kind of try different things. Where a lot of guys don't have that confidence.
Do you know, what's just popped in my head is that thing about before, about the difference potentially between men and women, is that language for emotion. And perhaps women have been doing the clothing thing for years, and that maybe is a language and an expression of yourself. And what you're kind of talking about there sounds like, yes, the enhancing and whatever, but it's almost a language as well to articulate. Is that?
Yeah, it is. I suppose if you look, you know, I'm not saying men haven't made an effort, you know, because, before I lost my hair, I had some wonderful haircuts and hairstyles and products and stuff like that. But obviously, you know, women throughout the decades, you know, men have just lost this. Actually, just thinking back to this now, I suppose if you go back, let's think like 40s and 50s, where guys always in suits. Oh, if you see old photographs, I love that. I mean, I love old movies. Maybe this is where it's come from. You know, watching a lot like Sherlock Holmes movies and Cary Grant and guys like this, Jim Stewart, you know, dressing like so sharp and stuff like that. And then that just stops. Maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe it's the 60s kind of come in and things really change there. Where I think women kept on dressing well and men just kind of, it kind of tailed off a little bit, unless you were working in corporate or you, you work for an organization where you needed a suit. So maybe that was the decline with men and confidence and dressing really well. Mm. So I do think, I don't know, I think there's a passion from men now more so to make, and I do think, you know.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, because I'll put myself in the category of, it's never been, you know, I wouldn't know where to start type thing, you know, and just brought up jeans, t-shirt, that kind of thing. Always brought up to, like, you look after your clothes, you keep them for ages, you know, you don't, that kind of thing. And there's a good reasons for that. But I suppose have an interest, and there's a lot to have an interest, curiosity. Where would you start? Where do you start if you're just like a typical bloke like me, for example?
Listen, I'm not just saying this as a pitch to come and shop with us. But definitely take a look at what we're doing on our socials. Listen, I'm not, like, again, you know, we might not be for everybody, but like, listen to styling tips like that. See, just think, like, sometimes I'll look at other people's social media, and whether it's guys who I follow on social, or whether it's other fashion retailers, or whether it's Pinterest, and just think, well, I like that. I like the way they do it. Like, that's why I tend to wear like a lot of boots, like, rather than shoes. Like, I wear boots with suits. I love it. Maybe because, like, I kind of like love grunge and that kind of thing. And like, maybe it's that rock element in me. And it's just finding pieces that you feel great with. Waistcoats as well. I flipping love waistcoats. Like, something that's, what am I going to do, double-breasted. You know, something that's just a little bit different. And it's finding those pieces, but find, you know, follow us for a start, as a plug. But have a, like I say, Pinterest and just, like, take some inspiration from there. But come in and, you know, we offer, like, one-to-one personal styling as appointments, but we've been doing this since day one. It's not even like, you know, packaged up in one-on-one personal styling, but you come into our stores and it's literally like, you know, what do you need the outfit for? You know, what is it? You're going out with the lads for beers, you're going to a wedding, you're going to the races, you're going on a, I don't know, weekend break in Europe or whatever. And the guys will help you. You know, they'll help you pull different things together. And it's really finding, if it's not us, somebody like that, where you can get some great advice.
Hmm. Yeah. And it's, again, it's that confidence through just stepping into it, picking, following people, absorbing a bit, and then stepping in and having a go.
And just testing it. Like, yeah. I think you were going back before about, you know, t-shirts and jeans. I love, like, that look as well. You know, I'll wear that, like, sometimes, like, you know, not get hammered, that's maybe a bit too much, but, you know, when t-shirts were waistcoats and so, again, having that confidence to just think, do I look good in that? Do I think I look good? Do I feel confident in what I'm wearing in the mirror? Fuck everybody else in that case. I'm going to walk out the door right now because I feel flipping epic.
Love it.
Yeah. And that's the way I do things now. I mean, some things I look... like, some things I look and I get into work and I'll be like, what was going on there this morning? But, like, I felt great. And it was, again, it was like, if I want to experiment or whatever, it's just like looking in the mirror and going, you know what, I don't care. But that comes with, you know, a lot of self-confidence, I think, as well.
Yeah. And we've talked about it outside, but the chicken and egg thing of, like, I'll buy it when I lose some weight, or I'll do, you know, that kind of thing.
I think that's mental. That's the most mental. This is typical guys, right? Because I've been here before too. Wait till I lose weight. Listen, I know how long it's taken me to lose weight over the years, right? And it'll just never happen. Just do it now. Do it now. Come in. Like, you know, if it's, we alter things and you'll just feel so much better for it. This is, like, you know, probably the most frequent comment on our socials that I've seen, like, over the year. I need to lose a bit of timber. Like, no, get in now, because you'll feel so much better, like, being styled in a great outfit and you'll probably go, tell you what, I feel good in that. I am going to lose a bit of weight here.
There's something in that, because I think, and having worked with lots of people over the years, personal experience, my own journey, etc., I think that sometimes we hang on to stuff that it's almost like a punishment. When I deserve it, I'll get it. And in the meantime, I'm going to wear the clothes that are a constant reminder of what I don't want to be. And there's that psychological aspect to it. So why not, you know?
Well, it's also as well, it's getting some advice on sizing as well, because I've done this and I'm speaking from experience and I'm speaking from seeing customers and speaking to customers as well. So I'm not just kind of making this up. Guys who think they're overweight, possibly some are, possibly some are not, will wear bigger clothes as well. And it's like, you know what? Like, wear, like, you know, but then it's the confidence that's coming into somewhere like us and going, okay, I'm going to try that. What do you think? And getting some advice. I had a friend come in last week for a blazer. I'll not mention his name, but if he watches this, he'll know who I'm talking about. And he's big, he's I'm not saying he's big, but he's just big, like, you know, his bones and like, he's like that. Like a man, And he's like, what do you think about the sizing on this? I was like, I think you can go down a couple of sizes. So sure enough, went down a couple of sizes. Just wasn't happy the way the blazer was sat. So I tell you what, come down one size, but come back and get the alterations done and get it fitted. And I see this all the time. It's kind of like guys think they're bigger than they are. I've had this. I still look in the mirror like now sometimes, and there literally is nothing on me like right now. And I still look in that mirror sometimes, go, I'm looking a bit chunky. And I'm just not. Like then other days I'll go, Jesus, I actually think I need to put some weight on. And it's funny what you see in the mirror. So then you've got to think, right, how do I feel? And then also, and I can guarantee, because what I've seen over the years is men coming up to me, but also coming up to our customers and telling them how good they look. You know, and that's not an ego thing. That's like, you know, and women as well. And I think once guys come in, get styled, go out wearing a great outfit, they'll start to get them comments when they're out and about. The lads might take the piss. But I can guarantee they'll be getting styled like the week after and we'll hang on a minute.
Love that. And it's interesting, that, just a quick one, because I've got a couple of quick fire questions for you, right? Some styling from the guru that I want to ask you. But that idea of looking in the mirror and what you see is not necessarily the reality. I think that, you know, we've got body dysmorphia as a condition, and that's serious. And you know, it's something absolutely to say. But I think there's an element of that that many of us can be prone to, just seeing there's a filter over what we see in the mirror based on what our mindset is like or what we feel about ourselves. And that's something that is something I can't do, obviously, with coaching, but I think that's a very real thing, isn't it?
I struggle with that most days. I really do. It's you know, I would say I'm a very confident person, but you know, most days I'm like, you know what, not feeling great for whatever reason, looking in that mirror. It is a real thing. It just, and again, it's going back. You know, we can just all be too hard on ourselves. And I think it's just get out there, put your clothes on, put a look on, get yourself out there, and I can guarantee you'll feel better.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're going to ask you about your object very shortly, but a couple of quick fire questions. In terms of it, right, these are going to sound silly, but they do cross my mind, so they cross others, right? Okay, T-shirts.
Yeah.
Hung up or folded?
Oh, I hang all mine up.
You do?
Just hang them up. Right. And I've got them all in order and colours and stuff like that in my wardrobe.
Right, okay. But that is it. Okay. Jeans, hung up or folded?
Again, I hang everything up.
Right, okay. So that's the theme for that. Yeah. Okay. Underpants, ironed or not?
Oh, I never iron them. I mean, what's the point? Because, absolutely. Right. That's too many valuable seconds and minutes of my life.
Do you know what? I'm relieved to hear that. Right. Somebody look up to you in this room. pleased.
No, right. Absolutely not. I don't have my shirt.
Right, okay. Anyway. Quick one on beards. You don't have a beard now. You did have. And as we know, I've had beards off or not. And the thing is, I've never quite sustained it because it just gets on me wick. It gets on me wick around my mouth and whatever. Any tips for beard care that might give me a fighting chance to hang on to it for
absolutely
a bit longer?
Absolutely. I mean, I thought about growing my back recently, but I don't know about that. What I found was, because I always had like stubble of some kind, when it got past a certain length, it was just so much better. It was like, when it was, I don't even know what that is, but like really itchy and stuff like that. But yeah, there's plenty of, I used, thinking back now, oils, balms, all kinds. And if you're going to grow it longer as well, definitely go and get it trimmed. Right. I used to go up with the guys, and I do miss that experience at Hoi Polloi in Newcastle, because like lovely hot towel and stuff like that. And it was like half an hour to chill and everything. But definitely use beard care. But if you're going to go for it, go for it. Let it grow out, because it does. I remember once I got past that itchy stage, it was fine.
So what about the bit? This is the bit. Is the bit around the mouth and the lips? You know, when you've got a strip bit sticking down, and
I used to like have a little trimmer and stuff like that.
And just
so like and learn how to trim it, you know, and get some advice, or like I was Google searching and stuff like that, how to trim beard.
This is it. Ask the guru. You know? So let's wrap up, because that's been brilliant. We've covered loads, absolutely loads there. As we ask every guest, what object or thing, could be clothing, could be something else, from your past, do you kind of look back and smile? It brings you joy, brings you some sort of positive memory or something back?
I thought about this a lot, and I'll tell you the reason why I couldn't bring it in, because I haven't got it. There's a couple of things, but the one for me, which I go back, I talked earlier about my childhood, I love my bikes. I love my BMXs. And when I think back, I think there's a movie called BMX Bandits.
I remember it.
Got to show me it now.
I remember.
But I love my bike, and I still love my bike now, less so with my dodgy knee and everything, but I have a road bike now. But my BMXs, I remember, I don't think it was my first BMX. I think I had a Rally Ultra Burner. I think that was my first decent one that I got for Christmas. And then like my dad went nuts, because I remember painting it white. Like, I don't know why I did that actually in the football field. But then I got a Mongoose. I can't remember, I'm going to say a Mongoose Pro, something like that. I might be wrong. But I remember like just, and the reason, I just remember them warm summer days being out with my friends, building ramps. I'm prone to injuries. Like, I mean, I fell off my bike last year and broke my ribs. Thinking back now, I remember going to a BMX park in Washington where I live when I was younger. And I had quite a horrific injury going over some big flip and jump, trying to do some tilts and stuff like that. But yeah, my BMXs were, like, they're the things that make me smile. Being outdoors, I think I've always liked being outdoors and always out on my bike.
Yeah. And I think that's part of this, that recollection. It's interesting to see how it might have lasted through your life. And sometimes how we put them aside when we grow up. And actually, that's where we can return to some of those joyful memories by going back to our childhood.
I mean, this is where like I'm so bad at like writing things down. You know what, I've tried journaling, and I'm going to, you know, I say this every flipping year. But writing those things down when they're popping into your mind. So like if you're not feeling great, write those what made you smile during the week, last month, last year, childhood. What made you, because when you're up against it with all these bad thoughts that are going on, it snowballs, it just gets out of control. Refer back to those things, you know, and how do you bring them back? I'm not saying, mate, I'm going to go back on my BMX or anything like that. It's bad enough staying on my road bike. But write them down and refer back to those good things.
Yeah. Brilliant. It's been brilliant, mate. I've really enjoyed it. It's been great. And I may be the only one who's relieved to know we don't have to iron underpants.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
I don't know if it is a thing, but it certainly crossed my mind as a question. But brilliant. Thank you for your time. It's been awesome having you on the couch.
Cheers.
And we'll no doubt return here for our next guests, but brilliant. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Dave. Oh.
hope that you enjoyed the episodes and got something from that. If you did, we would love you to share our podcast.
And if you're not already, subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review. That really helps spread the word.
I'd also like to thank our podcast producer, Benoyle, for doing a sensational job.
And thanks to the awesome Logan Nicholson of musicthemakers.com for the music for the podcast.
Catch you in the next episode.
Thanks, guys.